everyone, and welcome to Let's Get Visible, a podcast for business owners, helping them to grow, have a sustainable business, and get more visibility online. I'm Dawes Brown, and I'll be bringing you SEO and digital marketing tips, as well as interviews and conversations with other business owners. So let's get started. Today, I'm joined by founder of Oh My Word, Kate O'Mealy. She's a copywriter, editor, professional typo spotter, and small business mentor. In the beginning, she juggled her small business with working full-time in big business, but had a sneaky feeling that corporate life just wasn't for her. After 15 years working in corporate communications, she's written about many things from superannuation to recycling pizza boxes. She's also been a ghostwriter for CEOs and AFL footballers, editor and feature writer for lifestyle magazines. These days, Kate puts her wordy skills and business experience to good use, mentoring and working with a range of small businesses, startups, not-for-profits and solopreneurs. Kate is also the deputy editor and feature writer for Gold Coast Magazine. So let's welcome to the Let's Get Visible podcast, Kate.
Yeah.
Thank you for being part of the podcast today.
My pleasure.
Excellent. Now, you've had quite the journey from corporate life to running your own business and specializing in copywriting and small business mentoring. So let's begin with the tipping point for you and what you think the main reason was behind starting Oh My Word.
Starting Oh My Word was a bit of an accident, to be honest. So I was working, when I left uni, I was working in corporate communication. So a lot of my cohort had gone into journalism, working in newspapers, TV, all that sort of stuff. And corporate communications was, I didn't even know what that was until I ended up working in a bank. And anyway, they said, you'd be good at that. But as a result, I was writing lots about insurance and super and credit cards and was incredibly bored. And outside of work, people were asking me to help them with their websites or write a flyer or edit an essay or something like that. It was actually my brother's good idea. He said, oh, you should start that as a little business. And this was in 2004. So I was 24 at the time, working full time. And I think initially it was just like, oh no, I'm just doing it for friends because, you know, I'm just good at it and it was interesting. But yeah, he was the one that encouraged me to get the ABN and get started. So this was all really early days in terms of side hustles and
yeah.
But it really was just to have a bit more variety in my life. And then as time has gone on and kids have joined the family and looking for more flexible work, I decided to ramp up the business full time. Didn't go back to corporate after having my children, and it's just gone from strength to strength.
Excellent. And that seems to be a bit of a trend, and we've got quite a similar background in that regard, because as soon as the kids came along, same thing, really transitioning from that, you know, corporate world and going into your own thing. But I guess it can be a little bit scary as well.
The benefit of coming from a corporate background is really having that experience of best practice to go, well, what works? And they've got, obviously got very healthy budgets, but the process and the theory still applies, whether it's big business or small business, particularly in a copywriting sense. So you're still looking at who's your audience, what's your message, all those sorts of things. It still applies. So having learned that in a corporate environment with some really excellent colleagues, with really healthy budgets to test different ideas, to then take all of that 15 years of learning to go, okay, if I'm now working on a shoestring budget or a startup budget, what would I still do? What still works? So yeah, scary to go out on your own, but I guess in terms of your experience and knowledge, it just, same rules apply, just in a smaller setting.
Absolutely, and it's transferable. And I think you've hit the nail on the head there. It's the processes and what you've learned, definitely you can transfer through. I think it's the scary bit comes in because you're starting to wear many hats yourself as the business owner, which leads me into the next question that I have, which is if you had any significant challenges when you first started and really thought, okay, I'm completely moving away from corporate and now this is my full-time gig. Were there any challenges that you faced when you were starting to build it and wear those many hats within your own business, whether that's being your own accountant, your own, copywriter, all those kinds of things?
Absolutely. All of those things are challenging. It's funny, as a copywriter, writing about yourself is still incredibly hard. I think when I relaunched my website this year, that was one of the trickiest projects, being able to take a step back and have some perspective over my own identity in terms of putting that out there to the world. But certainly wearing all the hats is an awkward process. And one of the big things that really challenged me at the beginning was bookkeeping. Through my amazing bookkeeper and accountant, Stacey at Healthy Business Finances, I have learned to love my numbers and actually get quite a kick out of getting it right. But in the very early days, I was working from an Excel spreadsheet, going back and checking bank accounts and making sure that people had paid me. And then if they hadn't, I'm like, oh God, I'm going to have to send them this really awkward email going, hey, I just want to be paid, you know. And I'm the best of times. And even just like the simplicity of Xero having automated reminders. And I'm like, geez, that's just given me how many hours back in my week between reconciling invoices, sending invoices, and just upping that level of professionalism, which obviously saves me time in the long run, but is a better experience for my clients as well. So certainly numbers and bookkeeping. I used to say that I wasn't, my default was always, I'm a words person, I'm not a number person.
Yep.
But actually I can proudly say I dabble in both now. And yeah, prior to meeting Stacey and some other people that are real experts in their field that share their knowledge in a really plain English, easy to understand way, yeah, anything's achievable.
Yeah. And another really important point that you've touched on there is being able to outsource the bits where you may not be the expert in that area. And so have you found, I know this has been my experience, but over the last 4 years of launching my business, is that those people have really helped grow and build what I am and what I have today. And so, yes, having those people be able to support you where they can really add their magic is so important.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's probably just been in the last probably 6 or 12 months within the business of, yeah, being quite strategic in what I'm going to outsource. In the last 6 months, I've been working with a virtual assistant, with other marketing consultants to help me launch a new offering within my business, with SEO help, with Facebook ad help, all those things where, yes, in theory, I could learn how to do it myself with time, but also knowing what you enjoy in the business and what you want to be spending your time on. Sometimes it's more profitable and conducive to keeping my sanity.
100%. You couldn't have said it better. Absolutely. And so with the services that you provide to your clients, can you tell us a little bit about that? And I know there's a few different things that you do. So we'll probably start with the small business mentoring and how you help people with that.
Yeah, that's evolved over the last couple of years from the sort of two types of businesses or two types of clients I work with in that space. There are people that have an idea for and have a cracking business idea, but don't have the business smarts to know how to get started and implement. So that's one audience that I really enjoy working with, you know, having had a business for over 15 years to go, okay, here are all the stumbling blocks I had. You don't need to do that. Here's a checklist to get you started. And really talking through the idea about what's the business name, what's your tone of voice, how do you want to be perceived by people, who's your audience, and really just talking through all of those basics to get them on a really solid path. That took me a hell of a lot longer to nail.
Yep.
The second group of clients in that mentoring space are people that are sole traders, often working at home alone or in their practice or office alone, but just really want another business mind to come in and help workshop ideas and work on the business, not in the business, and really have that sort of high level view of going, okay, what do you want to achieve? What does success look like for you in this business? How do you want to grow? And I think it's really just being that sounding board and just another ideas person. That is one thing I really miss from working in corporate, is that collaboration with a team that are literally just at the desk next to you, where you can go, hey, I've got this idea, and they go, oh yeah, that sounds great, and maybe we could do this as well, and you go, oh great. So I really do miss that collaboration, and that's what I enjoy about working with those mentoring clients, is that we sit down over a cup of tea and just look at all the different ideas and brainstorm and put a plan in place.
That's excellent. And it's really that external perspective. And I find that with my clients as well, it's having that view of things where you're not so close to the business or to the work that you're doing. And that external perspective can make such a difference to the way you then design your path forward. And I'm sure your clients would give you a lot of that feedback too, that, oh, you've taken a look at this and you've given me your insights and recommendations, and they've not necessarily thought about things in that way. So is that something that commonly happens?
Absolutely. And I think it's just so much fun to sit down with somebody and go, okay, what do you want to achieve? What is all these? I guess it's my role to come in and say, look, these are all the possibilities. Let's, you know, jot them all down. And what do you want to prioritize? What do you want this business to be? Is it a multi-million dollar extravaganza, or is it a business that allows you to do all the school pickups, be it performances, all that sort of stuff, and it fits into, you know, the rest of your life? And really understanding what the drivers are for people in having a business and wanting to run a business.
I love that, because success looks different for everybody. And I'm not sure if you feel about this way too, but predominantly on social media, it's all about how to grow and how to be the biggest and how to be the best and all this kind of thing. And I sit there and go, that's actually not aligned with my vision or my mission or why I set out and started my own consulting business. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering your perspective on that, particularly when you are working with different clients in the mentoring space. Yeah, are you finding that I guess perception of being successful doesn't necessarily mean that you have to build a massive team and become the biggest and the most extravagant in your industry or field?
Yes, you couldn't have nailed that better, girls. Absolutely. And I have that similar conversations with my clients, but also with my peers, copywriting peers. You don't have to be everything to everybody. Copywriting has really evolved as a skill set, particularly in the last 5 years, I've really noticed, where just because you can doesn't mean you should. So
I love that.
I often, you know, well, the example, my personal example is that I had grand visions of hitting like the travel industry and going, okay, yeah, I want to be a travel writer and I'll do blogs about travel and all this sort of stuff. Turns out I'm terrible at that. I'm really great at with my clients that are particularly like business communications, internal communications with staff, because obviously that had such an extensive background in that. And I really found writing overly very descriptive, the color of the ocean, feeling that you're sitting under a palm tree drinking a cocktail, I really struggled with that. But for other people, that's absolutely their sweet spot, as is academic writing, as is medical industry writing, as is, there's so many different niches to that. And again, I could give it another crack, but it takes me twice as long to write those sorts of articles. It's not my sweet spot. And in the end, I don't really find it that enjoyable because I stress out so much about it. And yeah, just because you can do something doesn't mean you should always try and be everything to everybody. You can
agree. Put
your hand up and go, actually, I'm really good at this, and refer work onwards to other people where that is their bag.
I love it. And being passionate about something makes it easier to do. Whereas I feel like when you're forcing yourself to do something, as you said, just because I can doesn't mean I should. If there's a particular niche or area that's really not getting those creative juices flowing, then it does take twice, sometimes three times the amount of time in order to accomplish the same thing had you worked on something that you did have more passion for or enjoyed doing. So that's great. And so the other part of your services is also the copywriting bit. And you're also, as mentioned in the introduction, the deputy editor with Cold Coast Magazine.
I guess that really has been the core of my business for a long time, is putting my wordy skills to good use. And when I talk to a lot of clients, there's so many people that just aren't confident in their own writing, and they're great at whatever their business is. They love what they do, but then trying to communicate that to other people is just not their strong suit. So really working with people to understand the story behind their business, really sharing, particularly with sole traders, you are the business, you are the person. So really being able to share those stories and share that person authentically across their website, in their social media, and really helping people to feel confident about the way they communicate. And I think as well, like particularly with the growth of social media, back in my corporate days, it was a very much a business communications, was very serious and formal. But you know, if you've got, even particularly with your brand doors, it is quite playful. You do have a license just to be yourself. It's your business. Yep. You're it.
That's so, it.
So I think it's so much, it can be easier for people now when you go, you have permission to have fun in the way you communicate.
I love that. Permission to have fun. Yeah.
And then looking at other organisations where it might be a financial planner or an accountant, where that sort of, you know, legal firm or something like that, where the subject matter is serious, can be serious, and does need to have professionalism. You can always be professional and approachable. You can always be professional and a little bit playful and put your personality. And there are some amazing brands that do that particularly well. But yeah, I think a lot of clients often feel they need to be doing it a particular way, or it's very formal and very structured, and it really doesn't always have to be that way.
Absolutely. And I'm finding more and more businesses, even accountants and lawyers and so forth, are starting to have a bit more fun in everything that they create, from, as you said, your social media posts to the content that lives on their website. And I think it does make them more approachable. Whereas when you're just sticking to that real corporate line, people don't buy the product or service. They're buying the people that are within that business. So I think the more personable that you can be, and just removing some of those barriers, can also lead to more opportunities that way as well.
And also the right type of client. Putting out this vibe that everything's very formal and you're really not like that, drawing like-minded people, like-minded clients towards you, because they know what they're going to get.
That's very true. Excellent point. Now, through the many years, as you said, you launched in 2004. I'm trying to think even where I was or what I was doing in 2004. It seems like an absolute lifetime ago. But you've been through quite a few different experiences, and hindsight can be a really interesting thing. Through the highs and the lows, is there anything that you would do differently, and why? Yes?
A couple of the big things that I've really learned over the years, I need to not take feedback quite so personally. I think and it's come with experience too, oftentimes where I've not had a good fit with a client, it's caused miscommunication, and they're not as happy as I would hope, and I feel like I've done the right job and what was it on the brief, but then it's not met their expectations. And then I've just gone, oh my goodness, I'm the worst copywriter, and quite dramatic, though.
Yeah.
Fortunately, that's only happened maybe once or twice. And in hindsight, I realised my gut was telling me very early on that they weren't a great fit for me, and I really should have called it a lot earlier. I didn't. And then they're also, of course they are, they're always the jobs that the project budget is low.
Yes.
Like, you know, I don't want to spend any money, but you end up working twice the amount of hours trying to appease them. And really, they're never going to be happy. So, fortunately, that's only happened a couple of times. And I've really worked on my radar in terms of how does this feel? Are we a good fit each way? I think when I was first starting out, I was just so happy to have any client. I'd be like, come to me. I can do everything.
Yep.
For everyone, for every personality type.
Yes. And
that was no fun there. So that's definitely one thing. You'll laugh at me, Dawes. But the other big thing that I really, in hindsight, wished I hadn't let go when I went travelling midway through, actually early days of the business. I moved overseas for a couple of years and lost my domain name.
Yes. Oh.
Never been able to get it back, although it's on back order. So I had the perfect URL and let that go. I'm still kicking mid-20s me going, really should I hold on to that?
Yeah, absolutely. And just touching on the point that you raised about not finding the right alignment with your clients. And I think there is a misconception out there, both as a consumer and also as a person running a business, that you can work with anyone and everyone. Obviously, there are some variables, budget and time and all that kind of thing. But very early on, we say yes to a lot of stuff, the stuff that we really shouldn't say yes to. And I've had instances, you've explained it, you know, perfectly, where they've got minimal budget, but they want the whole kit and caboodle. You end up working twice the amount of time or three times the amount of time, and you walk away from it going, okay, that was a pretty big lesson that I had to learn. And I definitely think that it builds you into a stronger business person, mm-hmm. in that you can start to really align better with the right clients. So what kinds of processes or things have you put in place? Let's say, for example, from that initial discovery call or session that clients have with you, what are some of the things that you've put in place just to ensure that that is the right person, and also you're fit for their service, like your service is fit for them, but they're also fit for you? What is it that you've started to do?
Yeah, I have clients that come to me directly. So they've either had an experience or a colleague or word of mouth. So someone they know has worked with me previously and then gotten in contact. And so they've already had a little bit of a discussion, unbeknown to me, of how I work. So that helps in terms of people self-filtering, whether they think that I would be a good fit with them. But I generally can pick up on, and this has taken 15 years to get to the point where you can work that through pretty quickly over the phone, whether what they need is something I can deliver. The other way projects come full on my plate is I've got a really good relationship with a couple of agencies. So I work as their in-house copywriter. A lot of clients come via them and it's project managed by the agency. And so my working relationship is primarily with the agency. And so we all work very well together as a team. We all work remotely, but I know that a lot of the work that comes through them, I know will be run really professionally. They're great designers, great web builders, great project managers, great animators, and I just slot in there with my skill set. And it's actually great not always having to do the people management side of things with the client management, but working with a really strong team of professionals as a unit. And I'm always very happy to take on those projects because I know that, you know, we have similar ways of working together, and it just makes the process so much easier. Yeah. In terms of one-on-one clients that come to me directly, the other thing I've found is when people, often you'll do a creative brief, and in the past I've sent through a form and go, can you fill out this brief? People are so reluctant to do that. I've now adopted the reverse brief approach, which is,
oh, tell me more about this.
Basically just doing it on the phone, Dawes.
Right. is the power of words though, isn't it? The power of words.
Yeah, to get sort of those key things from them just in their own words, to go, okay, what is it they want, extract the information that you need, and then really work out in that sort of 15-minute phone call going, expectations aligned, is this my skill set? Is it something I want to do? Or can I refer them on to somebody that might be a better fit or has those skills in spades that they need? And I'm also really happy to refer people onwards if I think that they'll get exactly what they need from somebody else. Like that, I'm one of many people with a similar set of skills, and if I think someone else can get exactly what they need from somebody else, that's okay too.
Love it. And one important thing that you've mentioned then was your strategic partnerships that you've developed over time, because sometimes as well, I think as business owners, we think it's a journey that we're taking alone. And that we do have to do all of the bits ourselves. Mm-hmm. But I think when you find complementary services and other people that can really support your magic and what you do, mm-hmm. and still be able to bring that to life through those strategic partnerships, it's incredibly important. So in trying to build those, if our audience is just starting out and they're thinking about doing the same thing, let's say they're in the niche or area of copywriting and they're just not sure where to begin. Do you have any tips around being able to build those relationships to really support the work that you do, rather than having to always be the front-facing person in your business?
Absolutely. There's a couple of things that have worked really well for me. With the agency that I work with a lot, I met Renee, who's the co-founder of Gosh Creative, at a networking event about 6 years ago. We both met in She Will Shine. We just hit it off. It was all, again, very relaxed, getting to know you, throwing the business cards around, but just a genuine chat, and realized that we actually liked each other as people first. And then we did a couple of little jobs together and realized that we worked quite well together. And that was, 6 years ago. And now we work together on big projects. We've just wrapped up one that's been happening for 8 months and working with each other sort of weekly. And that's been wonderful. Like, she's brought together a really good team of people to support her business. And I'm just happy to and proud to be one of those people. It is really just about making those connections and finding like-minded people. Also, in terms of word of mouth and referrals and those sorts of things, I do a mixture of face-to-face, catching up with people, meeting people, and Facebook groups as well. A really great group, which is called Freelance Writers and Friends, which is basically, we've met online. A bunch of copywriters over the years that we were all following each other on Instagram, and they were like, oh, actually we should put together a little Facebook group.
How fun.
And we often share referrals through that as well. So often, you know, if I'm at capacity or there's a project that's not my sweet spot, I'll put it in the group and just say, hey, has anyone got capacity? And I'll make the introductions, and then they're off there on their way. I definitely think in terms of building a business, that is a great way to do it. Looking at your peers and competitors as potential work streams.
Yeah.
As opposed to competition.
I love that, because sometimes we do happen to have that mindset as well, is that we think, oh, that person is doing something similar to me, or they're in the same area or niche, and the bars almost go up. But you can just achieve so much more when you collaborate, rather than looking at them as the competitors, which leads really beautifully into the visibility part of this podcast, of course, because it is the Let's Get Visible podcast. But how would you say has been the most effective way to really build your business and your brand out there in the big wide?
I'm lucky that I've got a business name that's become quite recognizable now. Oh my word. I can't even take credit for that business name. It was a friend I used to work with. She came up with it, a corporate colleague, actually. And it's just really stuck with people. So when, I introduced myself to it, and it's quite memorable in that sense. But over time, I was probably a bit of a late adopter to socials for promoting the business.
Okay, that's interesting.
I just, again, that was just really out of my comfort zone. It still is, to be honest. But I've just gotten in the habit of posting regularly and having a couple of themes that I'm probably becoming known for. So one of the hashtags that I started was Typo Tuesday.
Love it.
Where I take pictures of mainly signage that has horrific spelling errors or grammatical errors. One of my bugbears in business, because I always think with signage, how expensive it is.
Oh, yeah.
And I always just feel so gutted for people. Like, you've got this, a shop front sign or signage on your decals on your car or something, and it's got a typo on there. I'm like, it's such an injustice. And that sort of picked up a bit of momentum. So I often get pictures sent to me, DM by people in the most unusual places that say, you've got one for your Typo Tuesday.
Oh, so you're almost like the Celeste Barber of copywriting. Yeah. But she does the same. So she gets sent different videos and things, and then she, takes her, comedic spin on it. And I think you're nearly there. You're
really? I've gotten about a million followers off. But, the one funny one I had was from a lady. Yeah, a lot of my friends know what I'm like and they'll think.
Yeah.
But I realised that I'd, you know, tapped into something when there was a lady in, not even in Perth, it was somewhere in WA, and she found a typo on napkins in a Nando's.
Oh.
I can't think what the typo was, but
yeah,
she sent it to me saying, I thought you'd appreciate this. And because it's on napkins, they probably done a bulk print order of, I don't know, 1,000.
Absolutely.
On all these napkins. So just silly things like that where it's, I see typos at 50 paces. Like I just see them and then you can't unsee them. But I definitely think in a business setting, one of those bugbears for me that I just feel like.
Yeah. And so social, as you said, you had adopted a little bit later on, but has networking been a really big area to build your brand and business, do you think?
Definitely. So I relocated my business from Melbourne to regional New South Wales 4 years ago.
Okay.
And effectively starting from scratch in a networking sense. So, yeah, I've really done a bit of both in terms of local networks, like Facebook groups, creatives groups, that sort of thing. Tested out a few different co-working spaces to meet people and see what, you know, sort of what gels for me. Tried different networking events. I'm not socially awkward at the best of times. In big groups, like I find that very daunting. So,
right.
You know, big lunches and business cards and getting sat with a bunch of strangers and having to do your pitch
doesn't for me either. Yeah.
and so over time, like I've met other freelancers at school pickup, at kindy, there's one lady, Lydia, who's an events manager locally. I saw her working in the library when I was working there one day, and I only saw her a couple of weeks in a row and just went, hi, just curious, what do you do?
Yeah. Turns
out she was also a sole trader, and we've now kicked off a couple of sort of coffee lunch catch-ups with other freelancers and small business owners in our area.
Which I loved, by the way. I got to go to the first one. I'm spewing. I missed out the one this week, but I had already pre-booked client time and meetings, but it was awesome.
It goes back to the whole corporate thing as well. Like that whole formal nature just isn't my thing. And to sit down, have a coffee and lunch and meet one or two new people each time. And I need to say that Lydia and I, we've run two of them. but each time we get a few new people along, and each time people go, oh, how often do we do these? Like, and I'm like, oh, we can do them regularly if you want. So obviously there's other people that are similar to us that want to make those connections too, that want to step away from their laptop for a couple of hours and make those connections in person again.
Absolutely.
Without having to do booking fees and formal three-course lunches and all. So it's just finding your group of people, isn't it? And just, you know, those connections, either locally or online or however it works for you.
Yeah, and life happens. And I find sometimes that the pre-booked ones, if you're a parent or you've got something, a project that's really busy and you just can't leave the computer or desk, but you're booking these in and then you're feeling obligated to go, whereas when they're a little bit more relaxed and laid back, it's not putting that pressure on you. But definitely having that human connection is incredibly important. And I was chatting to a coach a couple of months ago, actually, and she said, Dawes, we actually need between 7 to 8 human interactions a day. And I was like, that's really interesting, given that a lot of us are now working remotely. Many business owners are independent, so they're running their own business. Even if they do have a small team, they're usually not in the same building or space. And just having those 7 or 8 human connections a day just makes such a difference to your mindset, your mental health, and then also your output. So how much you're able to achieve in that day and how you feel about what you've been able to achieve, because there's always so much to do. And as we said before, sometimes wearing many hats, but definitely agree that human connection is so important. And I can't wait for the next events. Now, when it comes to content, I'm sure that our audience have a few burning questions about what to do or how to go about it. So do you have any tips, let's say, for someone who has a website or is thinking about building a website or maybe doing some marketing material? What are some key tips that you can share when it comes to content that's like a non-negotiable? Here are the two or three things that you must take into account when you're thinking about creating some content.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, a couple of things that I always say to clients is being consistent. So yep. Consistent in terms of frequency. So whether you decide to post 3 times a day or 3 times a week or 3 times, whatever, do it consistently. Just make it regular and consistent also in your tone of voice. So if you've got a website that you're talking about what you're offering and it's very formal, and then on social media, you're like a bit more relaxed, and like you really want to have that consistency in look and feel and tone, that at every point of contact and communication that people see or read, they're getting the same tone, the same brand at every point of contact.
I love that. It's so important.
And we always think of the big thing, website and social media, all those sorts of things, but also things like your voicemail message or your e-signature or like just those little things, or it might even be your Xero invoice, just the tone of voice that you use in all of those points of communication that people are having an interaction with you and your brand. So making sure it's consistent in tone of voice is really important.
I love that. Yeah.
One of the other things I always mention is around clarity in who you're talking to. So being really, you know, often you can fall into the trap, particularly on websites, of just talking to an audience.
Yes.
And you're thinking about who you're actually talking to. So, you know, a lot of marketing people might talk about personas or customers or avatar sorts of things, but really it's if you're wanting clients that are similar rapport to you, what language do you both use? Where are you located? Are people, is it important that you're referring to a geographical space? Are they in your region? Where are they located online? So obviously Instagram and Facebook is probably a bit lighter. If your clients on LinkedIn, it's a little bit of a different tone, and there's different, you know, I say in inverted commas, the rules that apply to that platform. So just thinking about where are you putting your communications, and do you need to tweak them for different people, those different audiences, and also the location of where you, those channels, where you're placing that content as well.
I love it. Yes, being channel agnostic, I think, is the technical term, and making sure that you can speak to the right people at the right time. Mm-hmm. And again, lots of great tips that I'm going to take away as well, going back and reviewing all my bits and pieces and just making sure that doors really does come through in each of those different mediums, I think is incredibly important.
I forgot my most important one.
Tell me.
Spell check.
Spell check, of course.
You spell check. There's no excuses. Grammarly is great.
Grammarly is great.
So there's no reason why in this day and age, why there should be any type of.
I agree. And content is a massive thing when it comes to SEO as well. So ensuring all of those key points, again, really does impact and assist with your online visibility too. Fantastic. Thank you, Kate. Now, if you would like to get in contact with Kate, I'll be adding the Oh My Word website details and associated social media links just below the episode, so you too can take a look at Kate's amazing work and get in touch about her services. Thank you again for joining me on the podcast today, Kate. I know our audience has gotten lots of gold from your tips and our discussion today, and really appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thanks, Dawn.
Excellent. Thanks, Kate. Thanks for giving this show a listen, and don't forget to leave your feedback and rating. If you want to learn more about me or my services, please jump on over to letsgetvisible.com.au, where you'll find show notes and links to my social media profiles so you can connect there as well. Okay, well, that's a wrap for another episode. So I'll join you next time on the Let's Get Visible podcast. I'm gonna tell you no matter.